Oh man, too bad we can't put that on the pod. That's pretty good. Hey everybody, welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marcus, and Colin. Today we're back with a second part of a two-part podcast. So with the recent release of Halloween Kills, we decided we would take a look at the new Halloween trilogy. So we went back and took a detailed look at the 2018 version of Halloween. During that pod, we also discussed general thoughts in regards to the Halloween franchise. I talked about my trauma that I experienced as a child watching Halloween. Colin actually medically diagnosed Michael Myers. Marcus did his usual, sort of threw in a bunch of random thoughts. We did provide some initial thoughts in regards to Halloween Kills, so just spoiler-free on the 2018. So if you want to get a general sense of our opinion of the film and you listen to that podcast, you'll kind of get a sense of where we're going. For today, we are planning to do a very detailed walkthrough of Halloween Kills, so we're going to spoil the crap out of it. If you haven't seen the film yet and you want to be surprised, I would highly recommend you stop now and go watch the film and then come back and listen to this pod, because you definitely should come back and listen to it, because I'm sure we're going to have some interesting thoughts about the film today.
As Little John would say, "Arr, spoilers ahead."
No, Jesus.
Nicely done, Big John.
Well, might as well just jump right into it.
The fun part, I think that was maybe one of my favorite scenes, those two.
Today we're going to discuss what happens when you find an old Friday the 13th sequel script sitting around in a drawer, and you decide to film it as a Halloween movie. Directed by David Gordon Green, let's talk about the 12th film in the Halloween franchise, Halloween Kills.
My grandmother was right. The boogeyman was real.
It's over.
We can't hurt anyone ever again.
No one told you.
Told me what?
Somebody in there?
Michael Myers is alive.
Stop! You had a knife in your stomach.
You and Allison should not have to keep running. Evil dies tonight.
The door.
I'm not just gonna sit and watch another innocent person die.
If you track Michael's victims, that's a straight line to Michael's childhood home.
What do we do?
We fight.
Let's hunt him down.
Michael Myers is flesh and blood, but a man couldn't have survived that fire. The more he kills, the more he transcends.
Run! Go home now!
He's the essence of evil. I'm coming for you, Michael.
So I won't do a ton of setup on this. I will note that the budget was $20 million. So this film was actually twice as expensive as 2018's Halloween. And I would say this film is twice as bad.
But it's already made like $80 million, right?
It's made about $70 million worldwide. It had a huge U.S. opening of over $50 million. You know, I'm definitely somebody that wants movie theaters to survive after the pandemic. Even though this movie isn't that great, if it got people back into the theaters, great. You know, more power to them. Maybe I'll give them a little bit of a pass for that.
I wouldn't start off and say the movie's bad. It's just not a Halloween movie. If you took this and removed it from the franchise and it wasn't Michael Myers and it was a different killer, it might not be a bad movie, but with all the background and all of the lore, and they're trying to make this trilogy and trying to stay true to the originals, this one just goes completely off the rails.
I don't think this is a bad movie. I find this movie really interesting to watch. I think it was kind of a fascinating experience. I don't think that this is a good movie from things like, you know, character motivations, dialogue, anything around the Halloween mythology. It misses on all those, yeah. But when you mix it all together and watch it, you know, I found it very interesting. I thought it was entertaining, but it's certainly not what I would consider a Halloween film.
It's kind of a weird movie.
It's a weird movie, but it's kind of weird fun. Yeah. It's along the lines of Halloween 3. There's a little bit of a Halloween 3 wackiness to this.
To me, this falls perfectly in line with all of the other Halloween sequels.
Yep.
In that, I don't really care about this. This isn't that good. No. Except for, again, the three that I liked before, which were, well, the two sequels, Halloween 2018 and then Halloween 2007. And then the rest are just slasher movies.
Yeah, what's so strange is it's the same group that made 2018. To me, it feels like this is a completely different group of filmmakers. Like, nothing that ties in Halloween Kills to 2018 completely misses it. For people who like are so true to the franchise and trying to keep to the spirit of the Carpenter movie, this one misses on every regard. And so like it's really shocking. If Halloween Kills was the 2018 version, this whole trilogy would just, who cares about this trilogy? It's just another failed reboot.
This movie almost feels like a practical joke in some respects. It's such a strange choice, especially when you have what happened with 2018's Halloween, which, you know, we all just talked about that movie. We all really like that movie, and we think that there are elements of that movie that are very respectful to the source material, how they handle Myers as a character. There's, you know, some of the stalking. I mean, there is some gore, so over-the-top gore in the 2018 version, but otherwise, you very much feel like they were trying to keep it somewhat in line with Carpenter's original.
Yeah,
this one completely just abandons that entirely, and it goes very aggressively in a different direction. And this very much feels like a Friday the 13th movie to me.
Yeah,
Michael is now a Jason-like figure. I mean, he's using all sorts of improvised weapons. The characters around him act as stupid.
He's got some like Steven Seagal, like Aikido going.
It's going to be an interesting movie to talk about because it's just so strange.
Who do we blame this on? I mean, because if you look at the writers, you still have Danny McBride and David Gordon Green. But is this Scott Teams? Because there's no more Jeff Fradley on this one. Now it's Scott Teams.
Yeah, I wonder if like Danny McBride, it feels like more of his movie. Like maybe he got like a little more rain and they said, oh, okay, you go nuts with this one. And then we'll, I don't know. I have no idea how this got so bonkers.
I want to know what it is that they were going for. Wow, I feel like I've really let our audience down because the questions I'm asking are the questions that the audience should be asking of the podcasters.
You suck, dude.
I think you're putting some self-importance in front of yourself. Like, so you're representing the 2018 podcasters that were in that film. You're staying on podcasting brand. This movie very much feels a little bit like The Last Jedi. The new Star Wars trilogy, one of the problems they had is they didn't have a very tight three-film trilogy planned, right? So they gave free rein to each of the directors, and so you had, you know, obviously the original J.J. Abrams version, and then Rian Johnson took it in an entirely different direction, and then, you know, Abrams tried to come back.
Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, The Rise of Skywalker is like this weird, fucked-up, fan-fest kind of movie with a whole bunch of fan service in it. This movie makes me wonder if they actually did have a three-film plan, because Halloween 2018 feels pretty tight, it's effectively directed, and it ends on an interesting note at the time, which was, hey, maybe this could be the end of the trilogy. So I'm kind of wondering, did they actually even have a plan to do the next two? Like, was this a coherent three-film arc? Because it doesn't feel like it. It feels like they filmed the first one, and then they kind of went back to the drawing board, and then for whatever reason, this is what you get.
That I was surprised when you said in the 2018 that it was always planned as a trilogy. This one feels like, oh shit, we made a bunch of money from the last one. Let's do another.
Right.
I think it's like kind of retconned to be a trilogy thing.
So I know we did talk about the fact that this was planned as a trilogy, and yet did we talk about the fact that the ending with the fire in Halloween was added on? That wasn't the original ending. I mean, so if that's the case, what was their plan then going forward from the original script and the original ending?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because the 2018 version of Halloween, the very first version that they filmed and the first shooting script ended with basically a knife duel in front of Laurie's house. You see Michael walk away, and Michael actually walks through the area where all the mannequins are because, you know, again, Laurie's fascination with having white-faced mannequins in her house. We commented on this in the first podcast. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but apparently it's kind of a cool visual of Michael Myers walking through those mannequins and then sitting down. You're supposed to hear his breathing, his labored breathing.
A cup of tea?
What was that?
Does he have a cup of tea? Like, sits down, relaxes?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was Taster's Choice International Coffee.
Turkey Sando?
Anyways. And then they screened that, and for whatever reason, audiences didn't react to it like they wanted, so they said, okay, we'll go back and change the ending. So, which is actually a really great ending.
It's a great ending.
You have Michael Myers, he's trapped, there's fire around him, he's standing perfectly still, he's looking up at Laurie through this grate, and it's this really cool visual, great way to end the series. They could have spiked the football and walked away. Since they put that in place as a new ending, I'm wondering, do they have a new plan to move into the second film? Because the second film just feels weird. This is a very, very strange movie. I'll just keep saying that.
I kept feeling throughout this movie, Halloween Kills, specifically because of the hospital. Are there parallels between this movie and Halloween 2?
I mean, there aren't that many, honestly.
Okay.
So the one huge parallel, and that's the one unfortunate parallel, is that you give Jamie Lee Curtis almost nothing to do in this movie.
The one thing I remember about Halloween 2 is that she's in the hospital, the hospital is dark, and he comes and tries to kill her in the hospital.
Right.
And then I've sort of blocked everything else out. I just don't remember it. There had to have been a lot more going on.
Truthfully, there isn't with Halloween 2, right? So Halloween 2, she's loaded into the ambulance, taken to the hospital. She's given drugs that knock her out a little bit. And then she's basically laying in bed, interacting with characters. And she has one moment at the end where she hides. And then that actually leads to a really great suspenseful chase at the end of Halloween 2. That chase at the end of Halloween 2 is 10 times as suspenseful as anything that occurs in this film at any point. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't have a lot to do in that. She's basically kind of drugged up. She's limping down the hallway, and then she has that one big scene at the end where she's running from Myers through the parking lot, and that's really it. She's given just about as much to do in this film, and unfortunately, I don't know if they're trying to give her bigger acting moments or something, but the way that her character is developed in this movie, or she says a bunch of stuff that is just off-the-wall wackiness. She was stabbed, and all of a sudden, she's Sarah Connor.
I'm fine.
You're not fine. You had a knife in your fucking stomach.
It's a paper cut.
What? Who the fuck is this person? This is bizarre. It's unfortunate that you have Jamie Lee Curtis in this movie and you don't give her anything really to do.
At least after she comes out of surgery and she's like, oh yeah, it's just a paper cut. And then during the riot scene, she gets knocked into and she immediately goes down because she's like, 'cause it fucking hurts like hell.
She was just opened up and having major surgery. In fact, in this movie, they show you the surgery. they go in pretty close on the surgery for whatever reason.
More gore.
They saved all the acting chumps for Anthony Michael Hall.
Let's touch on the cast a little bit. So you have James Jude Courtney, who comes back as The Shape. I really do think his Michael Myers work here is pretty solid. The mannerisms are pretty effective. However, it's now crossing over from quiet stalker to somebody who's just kind of in your face. And you know, one other thing I'll mention is the score throughout this movie. I think the score is pretty bad. Like, I don't need electric guitar riffs, but the score in the early part of the film when they're doing the flashback is really effective. The music in the rest of the movie, not nearly effective, in my opinion. Okay.
I didn't really notice, but I think the fact that I didn't notice meant that it really was just not that good.
The traditional Halloween, kind of the slower, more ominous themes aren't really used here that much at all. There are elements and notes throughout the film, but they also kind of mix it up with this more aggressive electric guitar sound, and I just don't think the score is very effective.
The film probably suffers from sequelitis, which is, okay, now we have to do what we did before, but to 11, right?
Yeah. Bigger, top everything, make it more gory.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because that's not, I don't know, it's not the character of the Halloween films. I mean, they went there pretty quickly in the series progression, right? So when you make the original Halloween, there's no blood effectively. And then when you get to Halloween 2, after Friday the 13th, we talked about this a little bit in the first pod, they made a conscious choice to ramp the gore. And so in this one, it feels like they're doing that, but they're, like you said, taking it to 11. So the main interesting sort of stunt casting thing about this film is they bring back several characters and in some cases some of the actors from the original Halloween. Kylie Richards comes back as Lindsay. So she was the actual actress from the original Halloween.
Oh, she was?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, wow.
That's why Danelle wanted to see it. She's a real housewife. She's excited.
She's a real housewife?
From the Bravo show.
Oh, you guys watch those shows?
I do not.
Okay.
Danelle does.
Which version?
I think Beverly Hills.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It's not interesting.
Who knew? No, it's just more interesting that that's the actual Lindsay. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know she was the original actress.
I had no idea. That's great.
So Nancy Stevens comes back as Marion.
But is this really stunt casting? Like I had no idea. I'm not tuning into this to see all these old actors.
Well, I think this is interesting, right? I mean, they're doing it because obviously reverence for the source material.
Yeah, it's fan service.
It's an interesting marketing angle, I guess.
Oh, she was also in Halloween H2O. Interesting.
So you have Nancy Stevens. So she comes back as Marion, who was the nurse who was in the car with Dr. Loomis when Michael attacked. They, of course, replicate that attack almost exactly. The one thing that she is not is a marksman. But we'll talk about that when we get to that scene.
No one can shoot in this movie.
Then you have Charles Cypher. So he comes back as Lee Brackett. So he is the same actor who you got to see in Halloween 2 when he discovered his dead daughter. And he references that in this film. It's fun to see him here. I do have a question, which is, what happened to Lee Brackett in terms of his money? Did he get divorced or was he not managing his pension? Because He retired from the Haddonfield Sheriff's Department and is now working as a security guard at a hospital. So is he doing it because he likes to do it, or is he doing it because he needs the money?
I think he got termed out of the Sheriff's Department and he just loves serving the people.
Is that what it is? He's a civil servant?
No, he's actually just a drunk and he's got nothing else that he can do. So,
well, his daughter was slaughtered by a serial killer, so maybe I'll cut him some slack.
Right.
Robert Longstreet, so he shows up as Lonnie. The Lonnie character in this film is pretty bizarre. We can talk about that.
Let me ask you a question. Was Lonnie in the original Halloween or?
Yeah, no, Lonnie was actually one of the guys. He's one of the guys that was bullying Tommy.
But do we actually see that scene in Halloween?
Yeah, because he's getting hassled when, you know, the boogeyman's going to get you. The boogeyman's going to get
when
you.
When he's holding this pumpkin and then yeah. he falls on it. Oh, so that's Lonnie. Okay, I thought so. I just couldn't pinpoint who he was in the original. That's a good callback. I like that.
I don't know. All the callbacks and all that stuff to me is just, it's just playing like to one audience of people who just have totally obsessed with the original.
You mean like Dave?
Exactly. But like, it's such a small audience, right? I enjoy the movies. I've seen all the Halloweens, not all, but I've seen many of them. It's a great horror franchise. And to me, all that stuff is just either missed or like, who cares? Unless it's like playing to the actual story and it's actually adding something to the overall, it just seems gimmicky to a certain degree.
Well, I don't agree. I like it. I like all the callbacks. But the problem is, what do you do with it?
I don't mind that, like, okay, you're in this town and here's the people who are there before and you're showing their history and their growth and whatever's happened to them over 40 years. It's kind of interesting and could be worthwhile. But what they did with it in this story is just weak.
I mean, it's kind of cool to think that, oh, okay, so Lonnie was, he was a kid who was in the original, and yeah, he was bullying Tommy, and they actually even call that out in Halloween Kills, but he really has no other history beyond that, and then they create a history for him in this movie by having a flashback where Lonnie encounters Michael.
Yeah, so that's the same thing with Lindsay being the babysitter, the child of the babysitter who got killed.
You mean the girl being babysat by
that's what Lauren. I said.
You said the child of the babysitter who got killed. I mean, I know what you meant.
But that's all right. Like the
child the babysitter was watching, Colin. You're trying to get Marcus on a verbal technicality.
I am trying to get him on technicality.
So I think it's kind of cool that you're like, okay, this child that is grown up. But I think the film just relies on that being the gimmick to be like, oh, wow, here's a child that was being babysat. All right. And
for me, so somebody who actually has seen all these movies does have an interest in the franchise. I ended up getting distracted to the point where all I was looking for was references. About halfway through this movie, I was sort of taken out of the story itself. And I was just kind of like, oh, I wonder if that is a reference to Halloween 4 or, oh, yeah, I see that they're referencing something in Halloween 3. And it just became a little bit distracting to the point like where it was actually pulling me out of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like it relies too much on the previous material. All right, let's get into the movie itself.
I will say this. As someone who doesn't really remember any of these sequels, I love the original movies. I wasn't looking for them, but when they popped up, I recognized them and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool.
For me, it's the deeper dive shit, but it's not something that I think most people would even catch.
Yeah, but I do know what you're talking about because there are other films where I'm really distracted because I'm looking for that sort of thing.
Like when you're watching The Shining and all you can see is all the things that Kubrick put in there to demonstrate American Indian genocide, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, the clouds,
the Indian on the inside on the baking powder in the cabinet. A couple of things just on the cast. So we should talk about Anthony Michael Hall. It's fun to see him. I think that the early part of the movie when he's telling the story, I think he carries that pretty well.
It's a great speech, I have to say.
Teenage girls were walking home from Haddonfield High. They had sightings of a ghost-like figure creeping right through our town. A man in a white mask. Or was it more than a man? He was watching them. Before the night was over, three people would be murdered.
It's a good moment. But then unfortunately, they switch him into one mode. He becomes just crazy-eyed dude for the second half of the movie. And there is not a lot of modulation to his performance, it seems like.
I don't know. I'd be a little bummed out if I'm going to go see a talent show and this guy's come up here preaching about murders and other stuff. Be like, dude, can you just like sing or do a little like, I don't know.
Do his bird calls.
A little too heavy.
So what'd you guys think of his performance?
I thought it was really good. I really liked his speech.
I think he's good. I'm not sure the material, and certainly not the dialogue. I don't think it's particularly good.
I think he does a great job with it, what he's given. He delivers what he's being asked to do in a really powerful way. But it's a little overboard, a little too much.
Once you get to the hospital and suddenly he becomes the person who is taking control and rallying the townspeople to kill the evil force within their community, it goes off the rails a bit. But I think he does it very well.
Agreed.
He's really quite good. I also think that once you get to that point in the hospital, this is a guy who sees black and white. Like, he just sees the world in black and white.
I wonder how much of the movie is trying to tell something about the current times of mob mentality and people rallying against something. It's a very weird message I think they're trying to get across that just totally misses about, because they're talking about evil. The last speech by Jamie Lee Curtis and talking about fear and like you can't just ignore it. There's a lot of really, really strange messaging coming across. And I wonder if it is tied to like kind of current political climate and people jumping onto bandwagons and things along those lines. But if they do have a message, it is completely lost on me.
I mean, you know, he's totally into QAnon. But seriously, like, that's where this movie gets really weird. It's like the mob mentality. But what is the message? What is the message that they're trying to convey? And why is that message important to the Halloween franchise?
Lost on me.
Okay, this town has been terrorized for 40 years by Michael Myers, and now they're going to fight back. They've had enough. But then I go, like, they haven't been.
Exactly.
It's the history. Like, this one incident that happened 40 years ago, and, like, yeah. Why? There's like maybe like 4 or 5 people in this town that have been traumatized, but no one else. They'd heard the history, but that's it. It's like a spooky story.
Yeah.
This is the thing that just kind of drove me crazy when they were at the hospital. And the most dramatic moment, or the moment that represents this the most, in my opinion, is that Tommy goes to Lori's bed.
What do? We don't have the police support.
We fight. We always fight. Go find him, Tommy.
I will. What the fuck have you been doing for the past 40 years? Who have you been fighting exactly? I mean, Tommy, yeah. Was he like a vigilante in his like spare time? I don't know. It's weird. Okay. Well, sorry. One last person on the cast and then we can jump into the movie.
All right.
Thomas Mann as young Hawkins. To me, he was the MVP of the movie. I actually really liked young Hawkins. I thought that he did a good job of showing the vulnerability. You know, when he was initially scared in the opening sequences, I liked him. So shout out to Thomas Mann.
Sure.
Thanks, guys, for being as enthusiastic as I am about his performance. All right.
I think you just like the flashback and the recreation of the past events.
I do.
I'm not sure if it's, yeah.
So how about this? You guys want to start talking about this thing? So
here's what I think about young Hawkins. I think
Colin says no.
I think that, A, he should have never been a sheriff's deputy after that night. They really needed to take his gun away from him. I can't believe that the older deputy covered up for him after he shot the other deputy.
So we are talking about the movie. Are you sure you don't want to start talking about the movie?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's save that cut and let's go into it.
I don't want to talk about the movie. I want to talk about the movie. All
right. Sorry. Of course, this does take place right at the beginning, so we might as well segue right into it. Yeah, let's talk about the movie.
Okay, let's do that. The film opens as a direct continuation to 2018's Halloween.
Yeah, I really did like how the old one ended with the fire and they had the truck pulling away and then they had the fire trucks coming up and you can hear her yelling like.
Let it burn!
Because you're like, oh, how is Michael going to live from this? And then the fire trucks are coming. You're like, oh, okay, that's how they're going to live. They're going to save them.
So one thing that I think is just fun overall is that when they made the original Halloween 2, it was a bit of a novelty at the time because they basically made it as a direct continuation of the original film. So when you see Halloween 2, it opens basically the minute that Halloween ends. And so that was at the time sort of interesting, hadn't been done before. And so they do the same thing here, which is pretty interesting.
That was really cool. I'm impressed with the fire department is a much, much faster responder than the police department in Haddonfield.
Yes, they were.
And once again, Marcus, it is Haddonfield, not Haddonfield.
Haddonfield. I thought I fixed it that time. Damn it.
Well, though I will say I was a little sort of confused.
Haddonfield.
I was a little sort of
Haddonfield.
Just keep saying that every like 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. All right, good.
I was a little confused as to the actual opening scene of the film because I felt it was kind of a why.
Why not jump right to the flashback, you mean?
Yeah. I think that would have been a lot more effective, but instead you got Cameron finding Sheriff Hawkins.
Yeah.
Or Deputy Hawkins.
Yeah, it was a nice connection.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good because then it leads directly to the 1978 flashback. Because what Cameron finds Officer Hawkins laying on the ground, he had been stabbed in the throat by Sartain and his secret penknife. His opening dialogue is, he needs to die, or could he just die because he's got blood in his mouth, right? Aren't you going to say, holy shit, man, I got a hole in my neck, can you help me? Not, he needs to die.
By the way, Cameron, stop yelling for help and just dial 911. You were just on your phone. Like, what are you doing?
It does transition to 1978. So all of a sudden you are back in the Carpenter Halloween universe. I actually think this is a super strong opening. I love this portion of the film. I think it's really, really good. I was somewhat captivated when I was watching it. There's a lot of great stuff here. It really does feel like you're back in the Halloween neighborhood a little bit. You know, he's walking in an alley. What you see is you see Michael Myers. And I'll tell you one thing. When you see Michael Myers in the original mask and that original outfit, my youthful lizard brain response had a little bit of like a, ooh, ooh. Like, scary, scary. Like, so that was the scariest part of the movie for me, was that single scene where you see Myers in the old mask. Because they do a really good job replicating the outfit and the old mask. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree that this is probably the strongest part of the film.
It relies a little much on the previous. Like, it's nice that they recreated it and they give you some additional views. I'm not as strong on it as you. I'm not saying it's a bad scenes or anything like that, but I didn't think it made the movie.
I was interested in it to the point where what I started thinking about was, hey, why doesn't somebody go ahead and try to make an Ender's Shadow type movie for Halloween? What about somebody who's running like a parallel existence while Myers is there? And could you make an interesting movie out of that? Because that to me would be more interesting than even the sequel.
You've completely lost me.
They were saying like show an alternate, like, okay, this is happening. You just have like another town over and like,
no, not even another town. It's like, you know.
No, I'm joking. I was joking. That was my joke.
I guess what I'm saying is I was much more drawn to the old Halloween universe than anything that follows it. I found the flashbacks to be somewhat captivating. The rest of the movie, not so much.
Well, yeah, it's cool to see the old scenes from a new angle, right? So that's kind of cool. So I'll agree with that. I guess like compared to the rest of the movie, that was the best part.
Right.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, because I just feel like that old 1978 version of Haddonfield is just great. It captures much more the feeling of the original film than it does of the 2018 or 2021 versions.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that is in our previous pod, you mentioned that the scene where Michael Myers kills the woman on the crowded Halloween street, that didn't feel right to you because you were comparing that to the original. It's an interesting takeaway, because when you flash back, nobody's on the street. It feels dark. It feels very similar to what made the first Halloween so effective. And that's, I didn't even realize it until I was actually editing the podcast. One of the things that makes the scene where Laurie's walking across the street in the original Halloween so tense and amazing is because nobody's there. She feels totally isolated, and there's a little bit of that replicated in this flashback, a little bit of that same type of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really dark on the edges too. Like, it's really kind of fades the edges of the screen.
The lighting in the flashback version seems totally different than the lighting for everything that follows, and I think it's super effective.
In Haddonfield, they switched out the street lamps for the observatory nearby.
Sorry. Wow, still. Dude, I don't know where you're going.
Did you like take some peyote before this podcast? Like, I really have. I'm having a hard time following you.
Okay, well,
I'm on like 4 cups of coffee. Let's go. Let's go.
Here's what I was thinking about. So I just finished watching Dune. I watched this again. this movie again. But what I was thinking was, like, wouldn't you like to see a Halloween reboot that was directed by Denis Villeneuve?
Oh, totally.
That would be, like, so, so interesting.
It would be fascinating, actually. Or give Fincher a shot at Halloween.
Fincher would be, really, I just saw Gone Girl.
That would be crazy. That would be so much fun.
That'd be really, really good. Yeah, I just watched Gone Girl last week. That'd be super awesome.
All right, well, I know you guys are trying to avoid talking about this movie, but I'm going to draw you back into it.
Please do.
Let's go. Lonnie, don't get murdered, Lonnie. Don't get murdered, Lonnie.
So Hawkins is chasing Michael Myers, and he waits until Michael Myers walks around the corner, and then he fires 2 random shots into a neighborhood. So just kind of
again,
like,
why is this guy a deputy? Gun safety. He missed that course in deputy school.
Hawkins has to have somebody on the inside of the Haddonfield Police Department who's signing off on his certification for shooting, because he's not doing it on his own. He's not a marksman. I'm not even sure he's hitting the wall.
I think he's like in Hot Shots, Walleye or Fish Eye or whatever.
Walleye.
That's basically what Deputy Hawkins is.
So Hawkins chases Michael Myers a little bit, then some of the other deputies show up. Again, just one thing I really like here, the uniforms are completely replicated from, you know, the original and Halloween 2. Just the attention to detail, I think, is pretty great. Hawkins and one other deputy go walking, and that other deputy tells a story. They're trying to set up some sort of mythology about Michael Myers looking out a window.
My mom used to make me go over to his house to play. She felt bad. But he would just spend the whole time staring out of his sister's bedroom window. I always remember thinking, how was he looking at up there?
That fucking window, man.
How long are you going to stay at that play date if you go over to play with another kid and he's just staring out the window? Wouldn't you get bored pretty quick?
That's not a fun play date.
Yeah, they're trying to develop some sort of mythology about the window. And of course, in the original Halloween, that's the first time you hear that stinger when Michael Myers is, as a kid, is stalking his sister and you see his sister's light go on. So yes, there is some fascination with the sister's window, but nothing about him ever looking out the window previously in any of the movies.
They mention it, I think, 5 or 6 times throughout the movie. So this is like the big piece of the movie.
This is the big attempt at applying some mythology here.
Obviously, I don't know about obviously, but I'm led to believe Halloween Ends will somehow connect what the fuck's out that window. Because they talk about it numerous times, right? They're talking about, oh, he's looking at Haddonfield. No, he's not looking at anything. Oh, it's a plain town.
Is he looking at Haddonfield by chance?
Fuck, he's looking at Haddonfield. They mention this damn window like so many times. They show it multiple times. And like Big John and Little John, they have it there. What are they thinking? Did the filmmakers, when they're making it, let's make this the whole motive of Michael? Because he was sitting there staring out the window. Let's just focus on that one piece. And they just kept going.
Or does somebody take like a massive bong hit and go, window?
Wait till you see what we show is out that window.
It's like a magical portal to another world. It's like the closet in Narnia.
I think the neighbor is just getting changed across the street and Michael is trying to catch a glimpse.
All he has to do is turn around and look at his sister. Jesus Christ. Judith, put on some clothes.
As they're tracking Myers to the neighborhood, Lonnie, for whatever reason, is getting bullied by
those fucking Mulaney kids, man.
Leave me alone.
That's what you get when you fuck with the Mulaneys.
Get away from me. Leave me alone.
Let's get their assholes.
Don't fuck with the Mulaneys.
Like a bunch of angry Dickensian orphans. And that's like, there's a weird vibe. You know who these kids reminded me of? The family from Adam Sandler. O'Doyle rules.
Yeah. Right? I was just about to say that. O'Doyle rules.
O'Doyle rules.
O'Doyle, I got a feeling your whole family's going down.
So Lonnie runs away from them. He ends up running into Michael Myers. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Smith Grove car is parked behind Lonnie to the left when he's laying on the sidewalk. So just another Easter egg that's there. That's the kind of thing, as I started looking for that shit, so that I'm just finding it and, again, not paying as close attention to the movie.
I think the filmmakers were focused on that, too.
I had a question at this point. How exactly does this flashback sync up with the end of Halloween? Is this when we see Michael after he's been shot by Dr. Loomis and falls out the window and now he's on the run?
You go to the original Halloween, you could imagine that after Loomis sees the body disappear when he's looking over the railing, it cuts directly to what happens in this scene. If you remember the beginning of Halloween 2, Loomis runs downstairs, he goes to where the imprint of the body is, he puts his hand on there, there's some blood, and the neighbor comes out and...
What's going on out here? Call the police! Tell the sheriff I shot him!
Who?
Tell him he's still on the loose!
Is this some kind of joke? I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
We have to cut out Halloween 2.
Right.
And we'll just say, like, Halloween.
Assume that Loomis runs from here to a car or some other police, and then he runs around the corner, and then basically you go right to this moment. That's effectively what happens.
But it wasn't in the original.
Michael falls over the balcony.
Right.
He does disappear. He makes his way to his old house. Along the way, Hawkins shoots at him.
Runs into Lonnie.
He runs into Lonnie, which would happen to be across the street from the Myers house.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Michael does bump into Lonnie. He chooses not to kill him. He just kind of walks away. You know, Michael Myers, I guess, has a sell-by date when it comes to killing people, or kill-by date, I guess. He doesn't go after kids, apparently.
Well, what about Lumpy?
that was different about the 2018 Halloween. When he kills Lumpy in the beginning, that's the first time he actually kills a kid in the series.
I think he didn't kill Lonnie because he heard deputies were around the corner and he just walked across the street to the house. Because there was a stunning lack of time between Lonnie cowering after seeing Michael Myers and then all of a sudden the sheriff's deputies being there.
The sheriff's deputies appear on the scene relatively quickly.
I'm starting to believe that maybe if Michael is pure evil, that he really does have the ability to teleport.
The other power that he has, quite clearly, is to incapacitate people and prevent them from moving quickly. He must radiate this slowness that, you know, requires people to mesmerized or slow down. And I'm saying that as a joke, obviously, but
it's fear. That's just people freeze, you know, what a fight or flight.
So many examples, though, of people making really stupid choices when they come face to face with Michael Myers.
Little John, for example.
Yeah,
we'll get to that.
Yeah. Then they go into the Myers house. So this is, again, still in the flashback. So Hawkins and one other guy.
I think all Dave wants to focus on is this opening scene.
I did enjoy this opening scene.
All right.
So they go inside the house. At one point, they find a dead dog, which was actually referenced but not shown in the original Halloween.
What is that?
It's a dog.
It's still warm.
He got hungry.
Man wouldn't do that.
This isn't a man.
They're in the house. They hear him bumping around upstairs. They know he's in the house. No mystery at that point, right? Don't wait for backup. Michael jumps out and attacks the other deputy. One thing about that Myers attack, by the way, he does emerge with some rope in his hand. If you remember in the original Halloween, when Myers broke into the hardware store, he stole knives and some rope. So again, just calling back, calling back, calling back. He attacks with the rope and he goes to strangle the deputy and then Hawkins ends up shooting him accidentally in the throat. But what's great about this is, so Myers leaves and the guy's laying on the ground and there's just jets of blood just pumping out of his artery. And Hawkins decides not to apply direct pressure. He just watches him die and bleed out.
The marksmanship classes were the same day as the first aid classes, and Hawkins missed out on both.
Also, why didn't Hawkins just walk up to him, put your gun right to his head? I don't know.
In my notes right here in front of me, what I have is, why not take three steps and shoot the side of his head? That's what I have.
Yeah.
Look, Hawkins was peeing his pants at this point.
Right.
It's just no surprise that this is what happened.
Well, I was going to say, I do like that call out, Dave, because whenever I played Dungeons & Dragons, you'd always want to get that 50-foot of rope, and Michael put it to use. So that's good.
Oh, boy.
Are you supposed to like use rope in that, was that Oregon Wagon Trail game or whatever it is, too? I don't know.
Like, it seems like you always want rope because you may need it, but you never use it.
Right.
Dave, I want to get your opinion on this. So when Michael moves against the other deputy, mm-hmm. He moves like very quickly.
Quickly.
Oh, yeah. He comes running out of that closet.
Is this typical Michael Myers here? I don't think so. I think he's got one speed, grandma speed.
It made me think a little bit about the Annie death from the original Halloween. Because if you remember, he pops up in the back seat and he starts strangling her. You know, she's in the car and the windows are all fogged up, if you remember that. Yeah. And his movement there when he attacks her is very quick. He moves at a slow speed, but at the moment of attack, I guess he can move quickly.
Yes. He's like a snake.
He's like a cobra. You know what he is? He's the snake that you poke with a stick, as you mentioned in the first pod.
Well, yeah. You really don't want to do that.
Or play cobra poker.
That's a gladiator pod callback. All of a sudden, Dr. Loomis is there, Donald Pleasance. And initially, I thought that they had completely recreated him as a CGI actor, but apparently that's not the case. He was actually played by...
It was Brian Pleasance. No, Tom Jones Jr.
They did some lighting tricks, and they dubbed his voice. But I thought they did a pretty good job with it. He looks like Loomis to me.
They did a great job. I actually thought that they just did the whole...
Peter Cushing.
Digitization or something. They didn't have the budget to do Grand Moff Tarkin, but certainly, you know, they could have done some of that facial work.
Yeah, I didn't remember the original movie, so I thought it might have been a direct scene from the original, him coming in and then running out. I couldn't remember the exact timing. So it did look good. I thought it could have been part of the original.
This is kind of the start of some of the problems in the movie, though, because the dialogue. So what you hear outside when Loomis pulls up is, "He's here! The evil is here!" And then when he comes into the house... Is anyone ever going to use that language? It's just a very clunky bit of dialogue. The dialogue in this movie, I think, is pretty difficult.
So I noticed that as well, but I also sort of thought, well, that's sort of in keeping with Dr. Loomis.
Right. Loomis is a bit of a nutbag at this point and a terrible psychiatrist.
Yeah. I don't think I can help this patient. Let's kill him.
If you recall from the 2018 pod, the podcasters are listening to one of Dr. Loomis's recordings. And
Dr. Samuel Loomis, January 22nd, 1979. Do you wish to give a statement regarding your former patient, Michael Myers?
My suggestion is termination. Death is the only solution for Michael. There's nothing to be gained from keeping evil alive. A shot of sodium thiopental would render him unconscious. I'll be with him to make sure his life is extinguished. My ear on his chest to hear for myself that his vitals no longer function and immediately incinerate the body. It needs to die.
His recommendation is immediately terminate him and set him on fire. So
yeah, he's like, I want to be there. I want to watch him die. And then, yeah, I want to watch him being incinerated.
Yeah, and then I want to take a leak on his ashes.
It's the only way to be sure. And then we're going to nuke him from orbit.
Right, pretty much. Yeah. The end, you see Myers capture. So he comes out and he's standing in front and he's surrounded by all these cops with guns. I do think the visual of him standing there surrounded by a bunch of cops is actually really compelling and interesting. I thought it was.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because I'm pretty sure it's a direct callback to the beginning of Halloween. Young Michael comes out and he's in the front yard and the parents pull up and the camera's pulling back.
And he's surrounded by all the people.
The camera pulls back and you see all these deputies with their guns trained on him and everything. And then it goes boom right into the Halloween credits and the music. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I liked all that a lot. And I do think the other part of it is just seeing Myers standing there amongst a group of people, right? Versus, you know, so he was obviously kind of in the shadows, silently stalking around. So to see him just with people crowded around him like that with bright light on him, it's kind of a striking moment. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Now, the question I have is, why didn't he do anything at that point? Why didn't he try to go Steven Seagal and everyone? Because
it was a large group.
Jumping spin kicks, you mean? Where they almost get to the end of this movie?
I think maybe because he hadn't actually learned those moves yet. He spent the next 40 years watching Steven Seagal movies. And then he's like, okay.
What they should have done is they should have cut to, you gotta have a montage and see him in prison, like training. Working the bag and all that.
That would be hilarious. Maybe Rob Zombie can remake this movie and we can then see that.
Actually, you know, Rob Zombie's take on this movie would be really interesting.
I'd love to see that.
So then it jumps to a bar. So it's 2018 again. So this is a continuation of the 2018 Halloween. There are a group of survivors that are at a bar watching a talent show. So Tommy Doyle is there, Anthony Michael Hall. He gets up and he does a speech and talks about the impact of Michael Myers. And that's a really effective moment. And what he does at the end of it is he toasts Laurie as a thank you. And he mentions that the survivors of Michael Myers get together every Halloween, which, by the way, would be kind of a creepy tradition. I don't know if you're getting together to help survive the night or what, but I don't know. I thought that was a weird dynamic. And then it cuts over to Laurie when she's driving in the truck and it's one of the few moments that she actually really gets to, Jamie Lee Curtis gets to act in this movie where she's screaming, you know, let the house burn at the fire trucks driving by. So I liked all that.
For the talent show and Tommy's speech, the one thing I thought that was a little bit off, he tells this story about people being murdered and here are the survivors. And then at the end of it, he's like, is it real? Who knows? Like, wait, you just told this speech. You just said all these people are survivors. What are you talking about? Very, very strange writing in that little bit.
He has a line or a moment where he says that it's a power beyond mortal man. Feels like they're starting to lay the foundation for the mythology that he is a supernatural entity as opposed to just a man.
Well, look, it's been 40 years. They've had 40 years to mythologize him. It's sort of no surprise, but then I do wonder why the survivors are getting together on Halloween night and celebrating and drinking champagne and all that. I think at that point,
that makes sense.
40 years of trauma.
They survived it, and it's like it'd be like people getting together for like a 9/11 tribute or something like that now. Obviously, it's not the same degree, but it's the same idea of like you honor that anniversary.
Okay, well, if you look at the three people who were part of that group, Lonnie, Marion, and Lindsay, they survived, true, but it wasn't like Lori, right? Yeah. Lori was the one who was really terrorized.
Yeah, she was attacked. Lonnie was on the sidewalk, saw his feet, and then that's it.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like a big traumatic moment of Lonnie's childhood, I don't think.
I don't know if Lonnie actually earns his credentials as a true survivor.
Yeah. I mean, Tommy more so.
Oh, for sure.
But still.
Well, of course, because they were in the house with Michael Myers standing there with a knife, right? Yeah. So,
And Lindsay, her babysitter, got killed.
Yeah. All right. So then from here, it cuts to Laurie's burning house, and you see the firemen show up, and they are going to respond to Myers. This is the decision point in the movie to say, you know, we're no longer making a traditional Halloween movie. We are now going to make a Friday the 13th film.
Yeah, this is definitely when the wheels come off.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I mean, it's kind of fun, I mean, visually at least, because you have this moment where there are firemen that are out in front of the house. There's one that falls to the floor, and he goes to rescue, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really matter. But what you have is you have this moment where you have Myers, you know, walking out of the house, and they have made the choice to burn part of Myers' mask to make it more interesting and more distinctive. One of the reasons why I'll just say that this is a Friday the 13th move is if you look at that series and Jason's mask, over the course of that series, he gets hit in the head with an axe in part three. So he has there's a wedge in it in part four. He gets half of it chewed off with a propeller from a boat. And so all of a sudden the mask is missing in part seven. So this is completely Friday the 13th type approach to have a change of the character's physical characteristics.
What happens in part nine, Dave?
Actually, I can tell you, part nine, Jason becomes a supernatural force that can jump from body to body. Actually, that's what happens in part nine.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Doesn't he actually go to space at some point?
That's the next one. That's the 10th. That's Jason X, yes.
Jesus Christ.
I can't believe I know this shit, but truthfully, if you grew up in the 80s and you were a horror movie junkie, you had three main series. You had Halloween, Friday the 13th, and Nightmare on Elm Street. And yes, I saw all those movies.
When he comes out of the house, and then he's facing, there's like 11 firemen.
It's a hilarious moment because, first of all, the visual of him walking out through the fire is pretty cool.
That was really cool.
It's a great visual moment.
Yeah.
The score at that point, I think, is pretty effective too, because it's kind of like, okay, well, we're taking this in an entirely different direction. But then what's great is you see the firemen, they're sitting there. You see them like, okay, cranking their hands around the axe. The one guy like fires up the buzzsaw. It's like, they're going to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very bizarre. And they spray him with the water. I don't know.
These are first responders. These are not actual police officers or anything. They're firefighters. So the fact that he like decimated them all makes sense. Why aren't they running up to him with a blanket and like putting around him like he's a survivor? Like that I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. That's the fun. The guy comes walking out and they're not immediately trying to help him. They're like, oh shit, this is going to be a fight.
You know why? Because they recognized pure evil when it came out of the house.
Right. So pure evil comes out. Congratulations. And they end up in a situation where they have an axe. They have this buzzsaw. They have other tools. Their first mode to try to stop him is to shoot him with a very limp stream of water. Looks like that water hose has like a prostate problem or something. I don't know. But
it's a limp water spout.
Shockingly, that does not kill him. And then he ends up decimating each of the firemen. I did have a question here, which is, I think it's an interesting choice for them to each attack him one at a time, as opposed to maybe coming up on him in mass and surrounding him, but whatever.
Well, again, you're a firefighter. You're like, are we supposed to attack him? Or, once he starts killing the other firefighters, then go, well, I got this axe. I guess I need to defend myself.
This is straight up Jason Voorhees type stuff at this point, though.
Totally.
It was pretty bad.
And I think the question is, what is the driving force around, why is he so full of this rage?
Why is he angry?
He wants to look out that window.
I think I figured it out. He's 61 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's never been laid.
I was just going to say, never been laid? That was going to be my and he specifically had it in for his sister? Is that what you're thinking?
I don't know. He definitely had it in for his sister, but...
Well, he did. I mean... Anyways, so he kills everybody. There's a brief flashback to the hospital, and this is where you see Laurie. She's in surgery, and they say that she's going to survive. And again, the surgery is relatively gratuitous, so they got her open. You see a little quick flash of some intestines. And then you see Karen, Laurie's daughter, you know, wash her hands in the sink, and there's a particular emphasis on her wedding ring because her husband was killed by Michael Myers in the previous film.
Poor Ray.
Ray was just trying to set some mouse traps and get through life, but no, Michael Myers killed him. This is another reason why it's straight up Friday the 13th, because it cuts to Michael coming upon what I just wrote in my notes as the fodder couple, because they're only there to add a scene of death, and that's it. There's a couple, older couple, and she's flying a drone in her house, around inside her house, and then it goes into a back part of the house, and then it gets thrown back out, and of course they realize that Michael is in the house with them. There is a nice visual moment, like a very brief flash of him in the bathroom where he smashes out the light.
That's a good moment, yeah.
The brief visual when he turns on the light and then he breaks it. So that actually looks really good. You know, Myers jumps out, smashes the husband's head. And then there's a very strange moment where he chooses to break a light bulb. So he breaks a light bulb in half and then he just walks over and casually sticks it through this woman's throat. She does nothing to attempt to defend herself. There are a whole bunch of characters in this film that are unable to move in the presence of Michael Myers. They're absolutely frozen in place.
I thought the fluorescent light stab was a pretty good kill.
Yeah, it was a good Friday the 13th kill, is what it was. It was an interesting one.
That's exactly what it was. I sort of feel like the scene got added because Lenny Clark, who plays the man, he's a comedian. And I think that maybe he's friends with Danny McBride. And Danny McBride's like, oh, I got to throw you a bone. I'll write a scene for you in this movie.
I'll let you get your head smashed.
The interesting part at the end of that scene, the lady was kind of half dead and Michael had the old man against the butcher block. And
he turn him into a pin cushion.
Exactly.
They do a crossfade of the scene back to the talent show. But as they're crossfading the sound, you're having applause playing while he's stabbing the guy in the back. Because you also never see Michael doing anything with the bodies after he's killed him. But in this one, he's definitely like, he's got the guy there and he stabbed 6, 7, 8 knives into his back. And it's crossfading applause on top of that while that lady's watching him. Oh, is this Michael's performance piece, like murders his performance or something? It's very strange cutting in how they did that. So I don't know if that was intentional.
Previous podcast, we talked about Michael's creativity. He has a very creative side. Yeah. So combination of his art is a combination of creative body placement and just the murder itself.
Maybe murder is his expression. Like, that's how he expresses himself.
So in that first podcast, Colin was talking about he had a desire to see when Michael Myers gets his knife in the first one from the woman's kitchen, that it would have been interesting to say, oh, this one's too small. This one's too small. This one's just right. And that's basically what Myers does in this movie, because he puts 3 or 4 into the guy and then he picks one up and he's like, yeah, this one's pretty good. I'll stick with this one. And then he walks out with it.
Oh, is that what he was doing?
Oh, he's like testing him out?
It was knife selection, actually.
Oh, he's like, no, boom, no. Stab. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
But I did not notice the applause at all.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and check that out.
Yeah, I don't know if it was intentional or not, or who knows.
What I do know is we got a goddamn massacre on our hands.
Oh, the sheriff, man. Oh, the sheriff. Okay, so anyway, so then from here, it cuts back to the bar, and you have, so Marcus and Vanessa, who were briefly shown in Halloween 2018, so they're a couple dressed as a nurse and a doctor. And they're leaving. And there's this weird sort of repeated theme of Vanessa saying that Marcus isn't particularly manly, which,
Marcus?
I was going to say, in my experience, you know, Marcuses are not necessarily manly.
They do a couple of times where they do that kind of demasculate him, like him, like, oh, I forgot my stethoscope again.
Basically, everybody in the bar at the same time learns via a newscast that Myers is back or there are murders happening in town. And it's kind of funny because there's a moment where they're like, we're not sure these things are tied together. Come on, prison bus crash, yeah. Michael Myers on the loose, probably tied together, right?
Well, what's so funny is that in the bar, and especially with Tommy Doyle, it's the focus is all on Michael Myers, Michael Myers. And yet the rest of the town, I think, like we said, they don't know.
Right.
They're not putting two and two together because something happened 40 years ago. We don't know who's on that bus. You know, they flash on the newscast the faces of the two missing inmates. Again, they sort of blur out Michael's face.
Right.
But I wonder, do they have any names underneath there?
They should know. If they have pictures, they know the name. Yeah.
Like people just, they don't know. They don't know about Michael Myers, which is one of the reasons why I'm wondering later on as we get in the hospital scenes, why there's so many damn people there at that hospital. But we'll get to that.
They did have a quick flashback firefighter carnage at the compound. And they had like a very bizarre scene of like one of the firefighters on his PA.
Attention all responders, be advised. We have a violent criminal at large, armed and dangerous. We will deploy all units of frontline and tactical officers to search the area. This fugitive is
on foot. His name is Michael Myers. Go get him.
His name is Michael Myers. Go get him.
I want a hard target search, a very outhouse doghouse.
Yeah, that's totally what it felt like. That's exactly what it felt like.
Somebody had watched The Fugitive and decided to take their whoever that actor was, he's like, I'm going for my fugitive moment here.
Checkpoints go up in 15 miles. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
But it's also like, well, what does he look like? Or were they just supposed to be stop people in the street? Is your name Michael Myers?
Terrible.
Yeah, well, so at the bar, too, this is where you hear Marion. I think she's the first one that yells, evil dies tonight, which is repeated about 74,000 times as a line of dialogue in this movie. And it doesn't really work from the start, honestly. It doesn't feel like it. So Vanessa thinks that someone, or she knows that somebody's in her car. The windows are fogged up. By the way, direct callback to the original Halloween, as I mentioned, because that's how Annie dies, because her car is fogged up. So again, it's just constant callbacks. So Tommy goes to confront the guy in the car. I do think it's kind of funny, the moment where Tommy is walking out and he's cranking up his hands on the bat. I like Anthony Michael Hall in that scene. I think he's selling it. I like it. It's just kind of fun.
But they have like the red light on him and he's like total menacing.
Yeah,
like,
he looks...
It's a little much.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny, or I enjoyed it.
I really liked Anthony Michael Hall in this movie.
Oh, I do too, actually. Yeah, I'm 100%. Car crashes, and what you see is it's the other inmate, the guy who had the umbrella that was standing near Michael in the opening of the 2018 Halloween. It was the guy who was, I think he had the shoelace obsession. But you know what he does look like to me is he looks like the Penguin from Batman. That's, I think, the inspiration for this character. And the fact that he has an umbrella too just sells it that much further. He's very much like the Penguin from the Tim Burton Batman.
I think he reminds me of Boss Hogg, Sorrel Book.
Oh, yeah, I could see some
good
of that.
Call.
So Tommy starts trying to rally the town. You know, they're going to go kill Michael Myers. And then this is where there's a brief cut to where you meet Big John and Little John, a couple that are living in the old Myers house. The intro for Big John is kind of funny, where he's listening to, I don't know what the song is, but he's listening to a record. And the actor's having a good time in that scene, so that's kind of fun. And there's a moment where these kids come to the porch and they claim that their friend got a candy bar from their house and has a razor blade in her mouth. And they stage a kid laying on the ground on the sidewalk with blood and stuff. So it's kind of funny because Big John and Little John run out there. But again, I'll note, I sent you guys this picture last night. Halloween 2, kid gets a razor blade in the lips. I'm just wondering, is that a call out to Halloween 2? I don't know.
I don't know, but the old wives' tale about kids getting razor blades in their Halloween candy, I mean, to me it just seems like that.
I don't know if that's ever been proven that's ever happened, by the way. I think it's just
an urban legend. No, I don't think it has either.
I think that was my favorite scene in the movie, though. Kind of goofy. The interaction between the couple and then the kids were pretty funny. And then they're telling the story of, you know whose house this is? Fun little moment.
Yeah, right. They're like, do you know whose house this is? Michael Myers. Who the fuck is that?
I know, exactly. Yeah. He's delivering this very dramatic, serious story. And one of the things he says is,
he stabbed his sister in the tits.
Yuck.
Right upstairs.
I know, I caught that too.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to freak kids out, probably not necessarily the appropriate dialogue choice. Go back to the hospital, Hawkins. So he ends up next to Laurie. There is a funny moment where the sheriff is talking to Karen. And it's kind of funny because she's saying, he murdered my husband. And at that point, what you see is you see the sheriff open his notebook and take a note on something. Yep. Ooh. Michael Myers murdered him. The case closed. Or he might just be writing. It's like, must pick up some Pop-Tarts on the way home from this. I don't know what he's doing. But the sheriff, he's a terrible, terrible law enforcement officer. He really is. A strange character, too. Strange character choices across the board.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his goal is.
Tommy's rallying people to go out and actually find Michael Myers, and Lonnie shows up and he has a tackle box full of guns.
At this point, I think maybe it's Karen or maybe it's Lori. They're basically thinking Michael's coming here to the hospital.
It was Karen. Yeah, there was a side thread of like, oh, the Lori Michael connection. They made it in the 2018 also, right? Is Michael stalking Lori? Are they two connected? The evil needs to die because he instilled fear in her. There's some weird connection between the two of them, which makes no sense.
I think Laurie Strode has a narcissistic personality disorder. That's my takeaway.
Right? She thinks she has to die for Michael.
Yeah, it's all about her.
Or something like that. Yeah.
But Halloween 2 never happened, right? So the whole idea that he's going after his sister that doesn't exist.
Right.
They debunked that too. So there's like a...
Right.
Karen believes, like, Lori's been saying, he's coming after me, he's coming after me. Because right. Lori's like obsessed with this, which is a wrong obsession.
The doctor brought him there. Yeah.
He has nothing to do with you, Lori.
I assume this hospital is in a slightly alternate reality where nobody speaks or acts like an actual human being anymore. I mean, that's actually what it feels like, because Laurie Strode, after she's been stabbed in the stomach, she's like, it's a paper cut. She's going to get up and fight. So she's this dramatic Sarah Connor. You have Tommy Doyle down in the lobby of the hospital, and he gets up and he's going to give this dramatic, you know, sort of declaration about how they have to go out and attack Michael. And his actual dialogue is,
folks, please, the boogeyman is at large. He's got no choice but to emerge. He is an apex predator. When he surfaces, there will be no pause. There will be no empathy. This ends when Michael is dead. Michael Myers will be executed tonight, and it will not go without witness. We need all of you. Evil dies tonight.
Evil dies tonight.
I love that line. Yeah.
So if you're sitting there and you have some guy who's yelling that in a hospital, like, don't you think that the sheriff's deputies are probably going to tackle him and just and lock him up?
No, everyone gets together. Evil dies tonight. That's what I think.
There's two things that you, though, you have to take into consideration here. A, Lori's hopped up on morphine, so she's like out of her mind.
Right.
And B, Tommy Doyle is a QAnon supporter, so he'll believe anything.
There's a moment where Lori is dramatically going to get up to go, you know, so she has the energy to fight Michael Myers, and she takes some pain medication. And the way that she stabs herself with a needle is the most dramatic shot possibly ever captured on film.
Do you even know what that is?
It makes the pain go away.
Maybe more dramatic than Sylvester Stallone. Who am I going to model this on? Maybe like Stallone and Cobra or something like that?
Stallone from Rambo 3, where he's burning out the gunshot wound. He puts gunpowder and he cauterizes it. That's what that moment's like.
There you go.
The dialogue here gets really, really clunky because Lori starts saying things like,
let him come for me.
No.
Let him take my head as I take his.
No.
Maybe the only way he can die is if I die too.
No.
Karen, you and Allison should not have to keep running because of the darkness that I created, honey. So you just have to let me go.
What? Where the fuck is this coming from?
I tell
from?
You, this is the morphine talking.
Yeah, it's very strange. Like, her conversations with Hawkins, the two of them are just off the wall.
She's having a psychotropic drug reaction, I think, to whatever they gave her. She's just tripping balls.
She got a whole bunch of fentanyl.
She got into Ray's peyote.
If you take her dialogue, right, you know, maybe it's the only way he can die is if I die too. Well, boy, I guess I know how Halloween Ends is going to end, right? Isn't that line of dialogue specifically just being set up for Halloween Ends?
Lori's going to be outside the window. She's come like flying in with a knife and going to be like dual death.
It's going to be like the Matrix.
She says, you and Allison should not have to keep running from the darkness I created. Wait, what? Lori created darkness when? I mean, she was a babysitter.
Well, she's been obsessed with it. I can almost understand that. It's like, it's over the top, but she's been obsessed with him and she's created this like terrible atmosphere, you know, raising her daughter like she did. I can see that being like...
Yeah, I mean, if I was traumatized by a masked psychopath, I'd probably be a wackadoodle as well, but it's not, you know, I mean...
But I think that's the darkness she's talking. She's like, oh, I raised you in this paranoia and fear and all this stuff. But it's, yeah, the whole thing's kind of wacky.
She's in the room. She also dramatically pulls out the knife. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the sound design on that one, there's like a
swing
noise when she pulls it out. And she's pulling it out of like a hamper.
It was like the Wolverine claws. Like, she's got the knives coming out.
I think you're right, though. The trauma has changed her personality, and she's got some sort of narcissism. You know, she's probably now into the sociopath territory, and over the last 40 years, she's made it all about her. He's coming for her, and she has to kill him and all this stuff. Meanwhile, he's just, like, sitting quietly in a state mental hospital watching Steven Seagal movies and apparently must be reading a lot of medical manuals because... I don't know how he heals. Yeah, it's really, really kind of odd.
They begin to go out on patrol.
We did miss the one of my favorite scenes. And Tommy's going around and like warning all the people in the town to like go inside. And he goes to one like a convenience store, telling everyone there's evil out. He's trying to rally his posse and stuff like that. And there's like one guy in the background eating his spaghetti. Just like, all right, dude, whatever. I got some SpaghettiOs here. I'm good.
Out on patrol. Was it? I think it's Lindsay, Marion, and they come upon a park.
Marcus, Vanessa, Marianne, and Lindsay. The original survivors and the two people they picked up in a bar.
So there's a couple things. So one is, you know, it's outside at night and it's dark. So I do think that the overall aesthetic of the park environment is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Lindsay gets out and she's walking around and there are some kids on the swing set. She comes on them and she's trying to warn them to go home that Michael Myers is out there. And they're just a couple little dicks.
Yeah, no.
I would just turn around and walk away and say, look, fine, you're on your own. But they do mention that Michael Myers has been playing peekaboo with them, peeking out from behind trees. What is Michael Myers' motivation? Is he a force of killing nature that's going in one direction to get home? Or does he want to stop and play peekaboo in the park? Come on, pick a lane, Michael.
Come on. He's got a little bit of whimsy to him.
He does. Yeah, there's some whimsy. And you're right. And then the kids say, oh, no, Myers is, he's right over there. And then he's just kind of standing out in the open. I mean, and he's standing out in the open behind the car and... This car sequence is a terrible sequence overall, the way that it's executed.
You know, they try to recreate when he first grabbed Marion out of the car in the original Halloween. It's the same thing. Like, he breaks the window glass and grabs her.
Not only that, I mean, it's the exact same imagery of him going up the back where you see the red color go over the body. Which, that's a very effective moment from the original Halloween when they're in the rain and they get attacked.
Mm-hmm. To me, working hard to recreate things isn't necessarily, like, just focus on the movie.
Well, and this whole sequence is pretty goofy. So Myers is on top of the car. No one chooses to get out of the car and run. So everybody stays inside the car. Marion has a gun. And what she does is, if she sees Myers' hand appear on a window briefly and then move away, her next move is to shoot out the window. And so basically, she's just sitting there shooting out the windows of the car. Terrible marksman.
Why are you just giving guns out to people who don't know how to use them? Yeah. This is a really bad idea.
Marianne's a little bit older and her reflexes are a little bit slower than Michael's, I think.
She and Hawkins went to the same training academy for shooting, I think.
Well, at least they did better than Vanessa.
So Myers actually gets in the car and he ends up stabbing Marion. So Marion goes down pretty hard. The Myers assault on Marion, just like repeatedly sticking her with a knife, is pretty bad or pretty gratuitous. The guy that's dressed as the doctor in the backseat, so Marcus, he makes a move to try and strangle Michael Myers with a stethoscope. And you see Myers just kind of turn his head and look at him. And then he takes his knife and he shoves it straight into Marcus's eye. And this is another reason why this is absolutely Friday the 13th, because you get a long lingering shot of Marcus falling back into the car with the knife stuck in his face. I do appreciate the practical effects as someone who grew up watching movies like this. But if you go back and look at Friday the 13th, the first one, there's a girl who's in the shower and she gets an axe in her face. And there's a moment where the music cue and she slides down the wall. It is exactly that. I mean, it's almost beat for beat replicating that. This is so Friday the 13th and not Halloween.
I completely agree.
So Vanessa shows up. She has a gun and she's shooting. And the way that Michael Myers takes her out is he kicks the door. It hits her with the gun in her hand and she shoots herself in the face with the gun. Out of every death in this movie, I think that one is the most ridiculous.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. And it's definitely out of like a dumb action movie, not a horror movie.
Exactly.
It just seems it's like what Schwarzenegger would do to like kill the last guy.
Oh, it's totally. That's what it is. It is an 80s action movie moment.
If you think about it, if you were actually there with a gun, Michael's in the car. He just has a knife. He would have to actually get out of the car. All you need to do is walk up.
Casually.
And then point and shoot. Instead, she's like firing wildly as she like walks up to the car.
From like 40 yards away, spraying the car with bullets.
He does a nice thing by kicking the door, hits the gun, and turns it on her. And I mean, that was just sort of like a happy accident for him. But nice job, Michael, I have to say.
Goofy.
One other thing about this scene, and again, this is just another callback, when they go over to the little merry-go-round thing on the playground, a body that's there and it has a pumpkin mask from Halloween 3 on it. And the way that they show that for a moment, there is flashing light on that because of the way they're doing the lighting in terms of, I guess it's the things of the merry-go-round going around, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That is directly referencing, in my opinion, the test sequence from Halloween 3 where the kid gets his head melted, because that is flashing light at the kid in that scene in the movie. And I think that there's a brief little replication of that here.
And they show all three masks. So it's like the three masks from Halloween 3.
There's a lot of Halloween 3 references in these two movies.
Yeah, but who cares?
From here, this is where it gets to the Big John, Little John home invasion. So they're in the house. There's a knock at the door. They think it's the kids again.
It was at the back door.
There's a knock at the back door, and then they go to the back door.
Who trick-or-treats at the back door?
Exactly, right?
Well, I guess Big John and Little John.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, good Lord.
How's that? That was a good one. That was not intentional.
Sorry about that. Oh, my.
Okay. Anyways.
We did skip over a little bit of the hospital.
We kind of covered that in the earlier part. Did you have another?
I do like how the sheriff thinks he's Judge Dredd. He's like, I am the law.
I had that same thing.
I am the law. I am the law. But also, I think it was funny that Karen is pleading with Lori to just stay at the hospital, not try to do anything. Because at this point, the movie is starting to turn into a revenge thriller. She actually says this line.
So many people are dead. We're not equipped. Allison's run off with crazy Lonnie Elam. People are losing their minds. There are authorities who are trained to deal with exactly this kind of this. There's a system.
Yeah, are there authorities trained to deal with a Michael Myers type situation? Is that really in the training books?
And she also says there's a system. And then yeah. Laura dramatically says,
well, the system failed.
The anti-Michael Myers system has failed. Yes, apparently it has failed.
It's time for the people of Haddonfield to take justice into their own hands.
Terrible.
Getting to the Big John, Little John scene.
I did like this scene. It wasn't like tense or anything, but I thought it was a fun scene. Like not fun, like it was good.
It's a fun slasher movie scene from Friday the 13th. Yeah. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah. I like the stalking scene. It quiets things down. It's just like these two guys, there's someone in the house. They're trying to stop them. It's a good horror movie scene.
But the character decisions here are remarkably stupid. Incredibly stupid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole scene is weird. It starts with they're watching this movie, Minnie and Moskowitz.
Yeah, Minnie Moskowitz. Yeah.
With Seymour Cassell, and I think it's like Jenna Rollins, maybe? It's weird. I've never seen the movie, but it's just like so weird to see Seymour Cassell show up in this movie. They're just like in their shorts and a pirate outfit, and they're getting high and goofing on honey. It's just a weird scene.
When the knock happens on the back door, and then the front door, and then they go back to the back door, there is a bloody handprint on the wall just inside the door. And then they hear noises upstairs. If you were in that situation, back door was open, bloody hand on the wall, you hear noises upstairs, what is your first instinct?
Get the fuck out.
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
Do appreciate that Little John didn't go like, that's interesting. What? Now he immediately, there's someone in our house. Now I do have to question what Big John was thinking, because at this point he's like, all right, I'm taking off my rings and my watch. I'm going to do some fighting. I'm taking off my robe and I'm grabbing a little tiny cheese knife.
Exactly. He grabs his tiniest knife that you could find in that house. And he decides to go upstairs and confront Michael Myers. And what happens to him basically is he gets the old Roy Batty move from Blade Runner when he picks up Tyrell. Michael Myers picks him up and basically just pushes his eyeballs way back into his head using his thumbs in a relatively gratuitous moment. But what's great about that is you hear him, he's like, ah! You know, he's got the thumbs going into his eyes. And then it cuts away to Little John for a second, but then it cuts back to Big John one more time. So you can just really see Myers mangling his head. So there's just a lot of head death here, or head destruction.
It's a lot of head death here.
Little John goes upstairs and he sees Michael Myers standing there looking out the window. So Myers is looking out the window. He's not even looking to him. And he chooses to call to Michael to get his attention.
Michael. You've come home.
And then Michael turns around and then apparently, again, he's unable to take a single step because he just submits to death.
Who does this? Your partner is a bloody pulp on the ground.
Right.
And you look up, you see Michael Myers. The only thing that you can do in that situation is to immediately urinate yourself. Instead, he says, just very matter-of-factly, almost reverently, Michael,
you've come home.
What?
Again, this guy's been locked up for 40 years. No one's really thought about him.
No, they're in the Myers house. Yeah, so they
bought
get
that house because A, it's cheap, and B, it's got this notoriety around it. Like,
this, of course, is the room where Michael stabbed his sister in the tits.
Probably.
They were the ones who were like fascinated with the murders. And so they were the type to buy that house to be like, oh, this is the room. And like, oh, this is where Michael stood. So it felt like they were obsessed with it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's the first thing they told the kids too. They knew what house it was.
Yeah.
I also think, Dave, to your point, I think Michael was walking around the house going, oh, I love what you've done with this place.
This has been stylishly updated.
You have exquisite taste.
You hear little John scream. Divs cut back to the hospital. And then this is where Hawkins tells Laurie why he feels responsible for Myers still being alive. And that's because it cuts back one more scene to a flashback. As Michael Myers was being captured, Loomis walks up behind him and is just going to, you know, put a cap in his head, right? Just to take him out. And Hawkins jumps out and deflects Loomis's hand from making that shot. And then Loomis just fires wildly into the air. Hawkins says the reason he did that was because
I was lost in my own regret.
Then Michael killed again.
I saw the look in Loomis's eyes. All he wanted was more blood, more death. I couldn't take it. And in that moment, all I could think was that inside that monster, there was somebody's baby boy.
And this is right after he was clutching his partner's throat, like, this partner's bleeding out. And yet he comes downstairs and he has a moment of empathy for Myers. What? What the fuck? This whole sequence, I think, is pretty strange.
They did talk one more time about the sister's bedroom and the stupid window and reflections. And maybe he's not looking outside, but maybe he's reflecting in on himself. So stupid.
It's garbage. Yeah, he's looking out the window. He's looking at his own reflection. Why are you stuck in your sister's bedroom? Go to the fucking bathroom. There's a nice mirror in there if you want to look at yourself.
So stupid.
The dialogue here is pretty tough. They give Jamie Lee Curtis this line that she has to deliver seriously.
But now it needs to die. Because every time somebody's afraid, the boogeyman wins.
And then Hawkins, you have Hawkins. It needs to die. Man, this sequence or the dialogue back and forth in the hospital is really, really bad. The mob at the hospital, so everybody gets all fired up. I'm not sure how this other inmate made his way to the hospital. He was probably just trying to get some medical care and get home.
He was. He'd gotten injured in the car accident.
Yeah.
Right? And then, yeah, he walks in. Nobody's really familiar with Michael Myers in this town except for a couple people who, you know, 40 years ago. Oh, that's him. Like, is that him? I saw his face on TV. I think that's him. Meanwhile, you think everything you've heard about Michael Myers tonight, if you thought it was him, why aren't you immediately turning around and running away or going, it's him, it's him, it's him.
Felt like they did want to do something with that mob scene. And like, it feels like it was part of some sort of message they were attempting. And they drive him to kill himself. I don't know.
Just go back and watch the sheriff in that scene, because the mob starts getting agitated and moving in a direction. And he looks around. He looks confused. He truthfully... He looks like stoned out of his mind when you look at him. He looks like he's just like, doesn't know what's going on. So
he's like, dude, I just want to be this mayor, this or sheriff of this small town. I didn't expect anything to happen. This is, I just like my hat. I thought it was cool. This big black hat. Fuck this.
They chase the guy upstairs.
The mob itself is a bit ridiculous. And I understand what they're trying to do there.
Right.
I guess I can support that. They've been riled up. They're agitated. They think it's Michael, and they're going after him. But where it loses me is where you've got doctors running down the hallway, pushing people out of the way in their like agitated state to try to get him. Their blood is up. But you got doctors doing this? No, no, I'm sorry. There's a couple times like you think Karen just gets like thrown to the ground. Get out of my way. I got to go kill someone. It's like,
what about the Hippocratic oath? Come on.
Exactly. Like, do no harm. Like, what?
It has to get weird in the cafeteria later, right? Holy shit. Did you guys see Harold going nuts during the riot? He has a shocking amount of bloodlust for a podiatrist.
So it just lost me there.
I don't know if you've been to a hospital recently. They're not that easy to just come in and out. And like, you have like secure sections. You're not able to just wander wherever you want to go. Like, yeah. The whole thing's just.
The mentally handicapped penguin decides to take a swan dive out the window to avoid the mob.
Best move of the movie.
They linger on the body and the impact of the body, you know, for several seconds, and you see the entire back of his head is just spread out over the parking lot, but he is still twitching. Like, so it's just like
gratuitous brain shot.
I mean, it was gory, but I think that's actually like what a person would look like if they fell 10 stories or
the impact. Yes.
It was pretty awful looking.
The scene's also confusing because, okay, now this mob is like seeing they drove this guy to die. The mob has learned this mob violence is not going to pay off. But no, the last scene of the movie, too, it makes no sense. Like, what's the point of the hospital mob scene with the larger story and with the ending scene with the mob attacking Michael too.
I guess it's just so that Sheriff Brackett can say, now he's turning us into monsters.
I mean, I appreciate that they're giving Charles Cyphers, you know, they're throwing him a few bones here and there, a couple extra lines of dialogue. That's cool. But is anyone actually going to say that in that situation?
No, I'm going to be puking up my guts because it's just a gory, gory scene.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's what the inside of a head looks like.
Oh, talk about traumatized.
You would think at this point the mob would, oh, we've learned the error of our ways. We shouldn't be like this. And they kind of disperse. Is that not what they were going for? Is that what you, that's what I thought was going to happen at this point.
They kind of take in the exact opposite direction, right? Which is there's a rallying cry like, no, let's go out and find him because it's working out well so far. So let's just keep this train rolling.
Yeah. It was very strange. Like what the whole point of it.
Does jump back to 1978 one more time, and Hawkins, his partner, has this really slick move where he says, okay, well, why don't we just say that the gun went off when he was struggling with the other deputy? And he has a great line. He's like, just because your intentions are good doesn't mean everything always works out. I do like, he's like, don't look at it, just be cool and give me your gun. So,
be cool, dude.
Just be cool, man. Just be cool. Are you cool? Hand me the gun. You have Lonnie, Cameron, and Allison, and they're out on patrol. And Lonnie all of a sudden pulls out a map and says,
it went from Lori's compound to victims in her neighborhood to the park. Okay, if you track those locations, it's a straight line. Basically an arrow pointing straight to Lampkin Lane, Michael's childhood home.
By the way, what movie is that from? There's some other movie where they're sitting there and they're like, it's here, Tremors? It's here, it's here, and it's going a certain direction. What
Falling Down?
Tremors?
Tremors, actually, Marcus. Yeah, you got it.
You see, they're headed right for us. Look, they trapped Edgar here, grabbed old Fred right here, nailed those two poor suckers on the road, and the doctor's place is right here. Now, this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Is Haddonfield a smorgasbord for Michael Myers?
It might be. It's a place for him to practice his art, I guess. Lonnie has this great bit of dialogue where all of a sudden he is a Michael Myers expert.
I came face to face with this asshole when I was a kid. He creeps, he kills, he goes home.
Okay, if you knew that like a couple hours ago, maybe you guys should have set up a stakeout at his house.
And the face to face, he just saw his shoes and then he like disappeared.
Yeah, he looked up and saw this guy and probably shit himself. And that's his memory of Michael Myers, right? So when they get to the Myers house, Lonnie has this moment where he's going to go in and confront Michael Myers by himself. And the logic that he uses and the dialogue he uses to justify his actions is beyond stupid.
Okay, so the key is we stick together.
Now I'm going in alone.
What?
Mr. Elam.
You fucking dummy. You brought your kid to the belly of the beast.
Dad, no.
Mr. Elam, with all due respect, you really expect me to sit here while you go inside and confront the man that killed my father?
No, I don't expect you to. But I'm asking, Allison, for your sake and my son's, okay? Just stay here. You see anything suspicious, you honk the horn, all right? But you stay safe.
No one's going to be talking like that. Man, this is just... And here, this is why it feels like Friday the 13th, because this is all really stupid character actions, which you are willing to accept in the Friday the 13th series. Don't expect it as much from a Halloween film.
And then you go into the house...
Yeah, and Lonnie gets himself killed in like one shot.
and like 5 seconds later, he's dead.
Yeah.
And then they go in, Allison and Cameron, they go into the house.
What I liked about this moment
is
Michael put on a record as they enter the house.
Yeah. And they go into the house and they got their guns and their flashlights. And I'm going like, why just turn the house lights on? Like a normal person. I do like when they stumble upon Big John and Little John.
They're posed?
They're posed exactly in the same as they were in the picture that's on the desk.
Yeah.
And that's another little bit of Michael Myers whimsy.
Yeah, yeah. He's got some whimsy. By the way, before Lonnie enters the house, the way that he says goodbye to his son is...
I will see you at the finish line, buddy.
Apparently the finish line is death.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I was going to say, so the attack on Cameron is another one that is slightly gratuitous.
Slightly.
Michael Myers spends about, I don't know, seven to eight minutes is what it feels like, bashing Cameron's head around. And it's up and down and left and right. And
His head is like a pinball.
And then he actually even takes an additional step. He has his head through a banister. He stops when he's walking down the stairs to just crank it one more time. Myers is very thorough with his head work in this film.
He gets stabbed, what, 3 times by Allison?
No effect.
Yeah, no effect. He's not bleeding out.
So he's been shot in the neck, because he was shot in the neck earlier in 2018, Halloween, by Karen.
Yeah.
And he's been stabbed 3 times.
But he had his fingers blown off. You know, just wait till the last scene too, right?
He gets curb stomped on the stairs by Karen.
Yeah.
Stabbed in the back with a pitchfork.
One thing about that moment where Allison stabs him, so she also has a shotgun. And rather than take a shot at him, she runs up close enough so that the shotgun can be deflected by Michael before she pulls the trigger. By the way, I'm sure you guys were thinking about this just like I was. This is very similar to Brady's death in Halloween 4, where he tries to confront Michael with a shotgun.
Oh, absolutely. I immediately thought about Halloween 4.
That's what I figured.
Tom Brady was in Halloween 4?
He's a goat, dude. He's everywhere.
Even though she had a shotgun, at the moment, Michael was stabbing Cameron.
Right.
And so if she had fired, she would have hit Cameron too. But, you know, honestly, yeah, Cameron's kind of a bad boyfriend. And at that point, he's just cannon fodder.
And that neck trauma, I don't think he's walking away from that.
There's a pretty funny shot of Cameron when Michael Myers is, you know, killing him and moving up and down. There's one shot of his, he's kind of like, woo, he looks surprised. So he's like, I'm dying. The visuals of that scene are pretty funny.
That might be sort of realistic. If you were to get stabbed, you'd be like, oh my, am I stabbed? Like, because you're sort of, you're in immediate shock.
So Allison runs downstairs, or her leg is injured at that point. Very similar to Laurie in the original Halloween, by the way. Yet another callback. But she goes downstairs and Michael is walking down the stairs towards her. And as Myers steps down next to the door, Allison's move is to move away from the door and step back into the house versus step out the door. If you're looking at a single character action that summarizes the stupidity of characters in this movie, that's a good one to look at. Why not just exit the house? And it's, of course, so that Karen can show up and put a pitchfork through Myers' back. And then I also do like that she curb stomps him. That's pretty good, right? She walks up and just gets him in the back of the head with a foot. A
little De Niro kick.
Yeah, a little bit of De Niro there. Karen goes out front, or, you know, she steals Myers' mask and she goes out front and, you know, says, if you need one more victim or whatever, take me. It's the same, by the way. I'm sure I'll just one more reference because I'm just killing this. You guys remember in Halloween 4 when Loomis confronted Myers in the gas station and said, if you need one more victim, take me, right? You remember that scene?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So Karen's replicating that line of dialogue. So she kind of makes herself bait. Myers tracks her over to one more street. And then there's a moment, this another gotcha moment. So she repeats her gotcha line, which I think worked really well in the 2018 Halloween. I don't think it works as well here. It feels pretty forced. People turn on the lights. And at that point, it is kind of a fun moment because there's a bunch of people surrounding Michael Myers. And so from a cathartic standpoint, you're like, yeah, start wailing on this asshole, which is what they do. But then from here, the movie just really, really goes off the rails.
Yeah, I like how everyone's, they walk out and they've got a crowbar.
2x4.
A 2x4. A hockey stick.
Yeah, one guy's a hockey stick. I saw that.
I really don't think a hockey stick is going to cut it against Michael Myers. But okay. At least somebody else has like a gun and Michael ends up getting shot like 4 times in the chest.
Karen stabs him in the back.
They got him on the ropes.
Yeah, and they have the sheriff say, hey, Michael, it's Halloween. Everybody's entitled to one good scare. You know, so he's replicating that line of dialogue from the original.
Was it? Okay, I did not.
It was the original or Halloween 2. I guess I can't remember, which I think it was the original.
Throughout this whole scene, Laurie's like voiceover, like start throughout this whole scene.
It's after he's lying on the ground. I think they think that they've won. And I think that's when the voiceover starts.
Right. And this is where Laurie says that, you know, the more he kills, the more he transcends into something else. So this is where they're setting up for some supernatural bullshit.
Who is he, like Francis Dollarhide?
That's right. He gained power for each family he killed, right?
I think so, yeah.
On his path to becoming the Red Dragon.
This whole dialogue makes no sense.
I always thought Michael Myers was flesh and blood, just like you and me. But a mortal man could not have survived what he's lived through. The more he kills, the more he transcends into something else impossible to defeat. Fear. People are afraid. That is the true curse of Michael.
He'll always be here, Mommy. Even when we can't see him.
You can't defeat it with brute force.
If we only knew then what we know now.
He'll always be here, even if we can't see him.
It's almost like you're talking about your grandpa died, but he'll always be with us in our memory.
Yeah.
So Myers is on the ground, and then he gets up and basically, you know, he does do his Steven Seagal. If you guys remember, Jeff Speakman is the perfect weapon.
In his explosive motion picture debut, Jeff Speakman is the perfect weapon.
Never saw that movie, but that was that was some, at the time, that was some 80s, like, I think they were trying to make this guy an action star. I think he was a martial artist, and they were saying that, you know, his movies were different because he fought multiple people at the same time versus like one at a time.
I'm surprised you didn't pull out the old Kurt Thomas and Gymkhana reference.
Michael Myers jumps on a pommel horse that's randomly in the middle of the street and starts kicking people. I mean, it's almost that level of absurdity.
It is pretty goofy.
Truthfully, in watching this and seeing it twice now, I don't know what's a vision and what's real. Like, I think some of this could actually be retconned as a hallucination. When Karen's looking up at the window, maybe she's envisioning herself in that room, hallucinating that she is Myers' sister and getting killed. It makes no sense. If they were able to apprehend Myers earlier in 1978 by surrounding him with a bunch of guys with guns, the fact that he's just getting the shit kicked out of him by an entire mob of people, it makes no sense that he would ever get away.
It doesn't make any sense because, yeah, back in 78, you got one deputy with a baton taking him down with a couple of whacks.
Right.
And now you can't kill him.
Pitchfork in his back. He had a knife in his back. He got shot 2x4 to that face.
Yeah. Crowbar to the face, actually in the gas station in 2018. So
yeah. And I think you're right. Maybe this is some sort of a hallucination because, look, this is Haddonfield, Illinois. We all know that all of those...
This is Haddonfield, Colin.
We know that those townspeople would actually come out. They'd all have like AR-15s and they would just gun him down.
It's 2018.
And there's no chance this guy gets away at all. Even if he gets up and let's say he kills everybody, isn't there like a mob of people simply following him as he's walking around town because he's moving at 2 miles an hour? He'd be like the Pied Piper across Haddonfield, just kind of walking and people would be trying to find ways to kill him. The Michael Myers mythology in particular, when surrounded by a mob of people wailing on you, it doesn't work. It falls apart.
And they would not have stopped. I think they literally would have torn him apart limb from limb.
Here's one of the questions I have. In terms of him being able to sustain damage, can he regrow limbs? Because all you should do is you should cut off his legs and then just sit there and laugh at him as he crawls around on the ground trying to attack you. Right?
Wow, Dave.
You know, that is my takeaway from this movie. I want to fight Michael Myers. I really do. I want to fight him. I'm tired of watching all these characters do things so stupidly.
You go in like Lonnie with a gun and be dead in like 1 minute.
Maybe not go into close quarters battles with Michael Myers, right? Maybe stand in the middle of the street and just wait for him to come to you or get him in the park.
Is this the time that we talk about your battling 100 Michael Myers?
That would take a while, actually, so we're not going to go into that now. So.
Oh, come on. Can we at least talk about that at the end of this? I'm really very curious.
No, we'll save that for a different podcast.
We'll do a special podcast. He rises, he kills everyone, and Laurie's saying, it is the essence of evil. It is a terror that grows stronger when we try to hide. What? I don't know what they are trying to say.
She is so inside her head. It is unbelievable.
But what is the messaging the movie is trying to say here? Like, none of it makes any sense about what mythology they're trying to create, what message they might be trying to send, what they're saying Michael is. It's just goofy, bizarre, that just starts spouting fear and you can't hide, you have to attack it. Well, this whole group just tried to attack him and they weren't trying to hide. What's the messaging? Like, I don't
get it.
Maybe
it's an allegory for Trump. And Michael Myers is Trump. The townspeople are liberal Democrats, and they can't seem to kill Trump.
I honestly think it's something like that.
He keeps coming back more and more ridiculous, and everyone's going like, how is this happening?
So you're saying Michael Myers is a QAnon allegory, an extended QAnon allegory? Is that your take on this movie?
I think so.
I honestly think that is like some messaging here. You can't ignore it. You can't try to hide it. You have to fight it. It is a terror that will grow.
I thought you were doing some song lyrics there for a minute, honestly.
I don't know. The whole thing just means...
It's right on, except for it really only applies to about like 5 or 6 people in this town. Maybe after this, when he's like made his way through like half the town, then the whole town be like, we're all traumatized now. But honestly, nobody was traumatized except for 5 people.
So Allison's up front. I believe the police are there comforting her. Everyone's at the house, right?
She's out front of the Myers house. She's back over at the Myers house, yeah.
and the mob is attacking Myers like a block over. Karen comes back, goes into the Myers house, into the sister's bedroom. She looks out the window. And then somehow Michael gets back in the house and kills her.
Right, which is why I have to believe it's some sort of an hallucination or a projection, because
it makes no sense.
Why would she be back in the bedroom? How did Myers get over there?
Yeah, how did no one notice him going in the house?
I think this is just clunky filmmaking, because at this point, what she doesn't know is that Michael has now come back and killed the mob, killed Tommy Doyle.
How does he kill 30 people, though?
I have the same questions, but apparently he kills everyone there and then secretly makes his way back to the Myers house and gets in somehow
without
anyone knowing. And then Karen sort of looks upstairs, and she must think she hears something or sees something, and that's why she goes in. But this is so unbelievable.
So what you're saying is the ending is kind of stupid.
Kind of.
Beyond, yeah. And she's looking out the window. What's going to be out that window? Is that what their big reveal is going to be? It makes no sense.
That would have been interesting. And she goes up to the window and she looks out, and then she's like, huh? Oh, fucking A. And then immediately
killed.
She gets killed.
I don't know. That whole.
It's like the 2001 Space Odyssey ending, right? Like when.
It's full of stars.
It's full of stars. I mean, yeah, it's whatever.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Either that or she's like, I look really great in this window.
The lighting's really nice here.
I look beautiful.
Truthfully, I have no idea. I don't even know what they were really trying to go for at the end of this movie. I don't know what's real, what's not. It's pretty fucking bizarre as an ending, honestly.
It is a bizarre ending. It was completely out of left field.
Yeah, it's
none
very
of it
strange.
Makes sense.
I mean, I don't think it's particularly effective, because it just leaves you, huh? What's going on? And let me ask you this. What did you guys learn from this movie?
I did not learn anything from this movie. Okay. Like, I really don't know.
I learned don't join a mob. Mob violence doesn't pay off.
Yeah, I guess what I would say I learned is that if you take a Friday the 13th type script and you drop Michael Myers into it, it ends up being a weird, entertaining kind of mishmash, but it definitely does not feel like a Halloween film.
Have a plan for your movie.
I think what would have been a great ending to this, he walks back over, you know, he's following Karen. He stops there because he doesn't have his mask on at that time. But
right.
Karen's left the mask on the ground, right? And then the mob shows up, right? What would have been great is if the mask on the ground wasn't the Michael Myers mask, but it was the Jason hockey mask. And he picks that up and puts that on. Okay, yes, yeah. this is actually Jason. It's not Michael Myers after all.
Oh.
It was like Jason was dressing up as Michael Myers on Halloween.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to think that these guys, if they were big fans of Halloween, they probably had a similar arc as myself in terms of watching all those series and enjoying them. So maybe there was some intent to try to mash them together, but it's just such a strange, strange movie. I mean, it's fun. It's kind of enjoyable in a way because of the weirdness. So it's not as if I walk away from this saying it's a bad movie, but this very much feels like it is walled off in the world of Halloween 3 as a weird Halloween sort of experiment and not something that I would consider to be part of what the traditional feel of a Halloween film is. I guess that's my rap, by the way. Colin, what do you got?
Done.
For those of you who can't see, it's just a slow head shake.
It's an interesting movie. I mean, I've seen it twice now, and I was entertained like both times.
Yeah.
This is not a Halloween film to me. Sure, the characters are the same and everything, but there's a lot of head scratching going on.
There's a lot of head smashing going on as well.
Head smashing too. I enjoyed it, but as a sequel to Halloween, the 2018 Halloween, it went off the rails like very quickly. It started well, and then it just went downhill from there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree with that, because I think it did sort of start off strong, and I think there were a lot of opportunities to make a good film, but I don't think that they really understood what it is that they were trying to accomplish. And so they threw in a bunch of stuff to make a movie. And as a movie, you know, it works, but as a Halloween movie, does it work? No.
Marcus?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. It's an interesting horror movie. Or let's rephrase. I would say it's a good horror movie, kind of fun and entertaining. It does not feel like the same filmmakers made the 2018 Halloween. It just feels like a standard horror movie. Doesn't have the feel of the original, even the 2018, which did have that original feel. It just goes into a totally wacko Halloween remake. To that, it's not effective as a Halloween movie. It's kind of entertaining as a horror movie. There is no message. I think that was the key point, is they really don't know what they were trying to say, and that came across.
Yeah, I think I mainly walk away from this movie slightly shocked in a way, because I really do feel like David Gordon Green, Danny McBride, for the 2018 Halloween, it felt very respectful and very intentional that they were trying to make a really good horror movie and definitely bring in a lot of the traditional elements. So I guess I'm really confused, or I don't understand what they were thinking in terms of why take this type of turn for Halloween Kills. I guess maybe one thought there would be, well, with all the sequels, they tried to replicate what made Halloween so effective in the first place. And so what they wanted to try to do was, you know, hit the series with the defibrillator and kind of shock it and, you know, send it in a different direction. But I don't think it works. And this movie feels so much like a Friday the 13th movie to me all the way through. So that's the thing. And that's like stupid character choices, bad dialogue, this big hulking unstoppable killer who is in frame and on screen a lot more directly than you see the traditional Myers stuff. I just don't really understand it. It's very interesting and it's fun, but it's a very, very strange experience, especially following the 2018 Halloween. That's the thing that just trips me out. Like, I can't figure it out. Why do this? I don't get it.
What are your hopes for Halloween Ends?
You know, honestly, my hopes for Halloween Ends would be maybe...
I have no idea. This was all a dream.
You know, maybe it's something minimalist, right? That would be really interesting.
JR wakes up.
Could you create an environment where... did you ever see the movie Hush?
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, on Netflix, right? That's a good movie. It's about a woman who's deaf who is being stalked by a killer outside. It's very tense and very effective. And so I'd be curious to see. It's like, okay, take it back to its roots. Try to make it something that's a little bit smaller and more.
Well, more scary. That's what 2018 was a little bit. But that's what I don't know how they're going to go from this to whatever they're going to do next. I'm kind of curious to see what they do. But
yeah, 2018 felt more like a somewhat updated, gory version, but also be. Yeah. Respectful to Halloween. So this throws all the stalking slow stuff out the window and says, let's just go overdrive on the gore. And that's why it's weird. So I'll leave it at that. All right. Well, you know, we didn't give letter grades, guys. Colin, what's your letter grade?
I'm going to give it a B minus.
Marcus?
C minus.
Yeah, I'll give it a C plus, I think. All right. Well, hope you enjoyed our long, rambling, weird conversation about a long, rambling, weird movie, Halloween Kills. I think our conversation was representative of the movie itself. I think we all agreed there's lots to be interested in here, and there's some fun sequences and just the overall weirdness, and watching the characters act stupidly is kind of fun and entertaining, but some of the dialogue is just over the top, and in particular, the ending of this movie really feels like it makes no sense whatsoever. And so I'll be super curious to see where they take it in Halloween Ends. I guess maybe that's one thing. It did leave me interested enough to want to see what they do next, because I have no idea where it's going. I mean, Michael could end up in space. That could be the next thing, right?
Yeah. Who knows? That's definitely the end vibe, is what the heck are they going to do next? Because this one is like, he now can be like a pure, he's like the devil. He can be anything right now. Like, they can do anything they want with it. Like, it's really, oh no, he's like the essence of evil. I don't know. Bizarre.
And otherwise, we'll say this is the Real DMC podcast. Signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
See, now you can make the Friday the 13th noise. That's more appropriate.
Dude, psycho.
I thought you were doing some electronic music there for a second.
Wick, boots, and wats, and boots, and cats, and boots, and cats.